From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio, focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. And as we launch our, well, in the middle of our 22nd year here, the middle of the second year of the pandemic, and hopefully that pandemic, everybody's getting vaccinated. A lot of people are getting vaccinated, and people are waiting their turns patiently. And I just think everything's slowing down. So I think we're all gonna be just fine. And we are just pleased and honored to welcome in George Weigel, papal biographer and author of many, many books. George, good day to you.
Bob, nice to talk to you again.
Nice to talk to you again. I am looking at this book, Not Forgotten, and I just love it. I notice a little bit of Baltimore Oriole prejudice in there.
Well, that's called loyalty, not
loyalty,
prejudice.
Yes. And Gino Marchetti's in there, too.
Well, that's Colts, not
that's
Orioles,
the Colts. I know,
course.
I know. But Baltimore, yes. Yes. I don't even know where to start. But talk, and I should point out, Not Forgotten is a series of essays, short essays about all kinds of famous, sometimes not so famous people, many of whom George has met or known or interviewed over the years, and some that you just are offering your opinion about.
Yeah, it's an album of remarkable human personalities from a variety of fields. Church, obviously, public life, politics, sports, entertainment, the arts, literature, just about everything, science. And I have to say my most encouraging reaction to the book since it's been out for the past few weeks has been that people find it an encouraging book.
Yes.
We've been living through some dark times, and to spend a few moments with people who lived in the main noble lives, purposeful lives, vocational lives, seems to be encouraging to people, so I'm grateful for that.
Oh, that's well said. And it, of course, brought to us by our good friends at Ignatius Press, and that leads right into the University of San Francisco in 1951, the Dons, the football team. Tell us a little bit, and it involves Gino Marchetti as well. Tell us the story of the 1951 USF Dons.
It's hard for people to remember today, Bob, that college football in the early 1950s was much more important than pro football.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And the USF Dons were one of the best teams in the country. I mean, they were undefeated. And they were invited to a big Southern bowl game of their choice. But they were told that if they came, they couldn't bring any of their black players.
Right.
So the coach put this to the team, and Gino Marchetti, who was a defensive end on the team, a veteran of the Battle of the Bulge, future NFL Pro Hall of Famer, said, blank the big Southern Bowl. And that was the end of that. He was a man of real character, as were many of the other athletes in the book. Jackie Robinson,
right.
The great Frank Robinson, to go back to my Baltimore obsessions,
right.
Here. These were very different personalities than much of what we see in pro sports today. And I think they are worth remembering. It's worth recalling that people of both character and talent were the heroes of my younger days.
Yeah, you know, I grew up in Northern California and was alive, but too young to know about the 51 Dons at the time. But certainly followed a number of those. What, 10 went into the NFL, and then of course the great San Francisco Dons teams with Bill Russell in the mid 50s in basketball.
Right.
And it, you know, George, the other day I was watching, one of the spring football games, the FCS, they're playing, the one rung down from the big boys are playing a spring schedule. And final play of the game, one team's down by 3 points, the Hail Mary, it goes down to the end zone, and there's, 16 guys trying to get it, and it gets intercepted and by the defending team, and the game's over. And I watched, and the guy who intercepted it, the quarterback is still back at midfield on his hands and knees, like, lamenting what happened. And the defensive back runs all the way back to midfield with that ball and stuffs it in the quarterback's gut, and I'm like, whatever happened to being a good winner? You understand a poor loser. But we're seeing that, I think, in sports more and more.
It's become another form of performance art. Yeah. It's bad enough in sports. It's worse in politics.
Yeah.
And the political people I lift up in the book, Henry Hyde, Sergeant Shriver, Pat Moynihan, Scoop Jackson, Lindy Boggs, these were not performance artists. These were men and women who went into politics in order to get something done for the common good. And it's useful to be reminded today that there were people like that in public office in the United States not too long ago.
Yeah, not too long ago. That's exactly right. And I remember, you think maybe sports shouldn't be as important as it is, and yet it's very important. I remember as a little leaguer when Maris was chasing Ruth that year, and Maris was on national TV that Saturday, and he wore just a piece of tape, a white piece of tape around his wrist. And at our Little League game that night, there were 11 kids wearing a white piece of tape around their wrist.
There you go.
And they're talk about role models, and people we emulate. And it's distressing a little bit. I mean, there's still, as you point out, and that's one reason I enjoy this so much, the Jackie Robinsons, the Frank Robinsons, Earl Weaver, and Gino Marchetti, of course, were good human beings.
Yeah, they were. They had their rough edges.
Sure.
I mean, Earl Weaver was nobody's idea of a saint.
Tommy Lasorda.
He reminds me a little bit of Saint Jerome, actually.
Oh, really?
Saint Jerome was a notable curmudgeon.
Mm-hmm.
Saint Jerome was the Earl Weaver of doctors of the church, I suppose. Yeah, there was a kind of pride in professionalism.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, as you indicated a moment ago in your counterexample of that goofball running up the field,
right,
and mocking the quarterback, there were mores. It was understood that you weren't a jerk.
Right.
And unfortunately, the jerks seem to have taken over today. I mean, I'm still addicted to watching this stuff on television, but I have to say, I now, 5 times a game, I'm calling my brother and saying, I mean, can you imagine what you just saw? I mean, this guy is going on like he just won the Super Bowl,
exactly.
And he just made a normal play that he's being paid $5 million a year to make. So what is this? So anyway, we need not obsess on sports as performance art here. But throughout the whole book, I try to lift up the example of people who are worth imitating and knowing about a little more intimately. A lot of the people that I draw these miniatures of in the book are reasonably well known, but this book is an attempt to know them from inside the convictions that made them who they were. So it's a bit more of an intimate portrait. I think there are a lot of funny stories in the book. So I hope it's a good read. People tell me it is, and I'm gratified by that.
Well, you caught my attention with California Dreamin' and Cass Elliot. I'm guessing we're of the same generation, and just all those great songs in the '60s.
Yeah, but they were and they are. The Mamas and the Papas were great. I can still listen to that stuff with a lot of enjoyment. But the moral of that episode, which is about both Cass Elliot and Denny Doherty, one of the Papas, is that the self-absorption of the '60s prevented real love from forming between people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a sadness. Denny Doherty recognized it at the end of his life. Cass Elliot never did, and died, I believe, of a drug overdose. So while all of these lives are interesting and instructive, some of them give us instruction along the old via negativa here.
Mm-hmm. You know, someone that maybe a few people have heard of that's in the book, Albert Einstein.
Albert Einstein was a very interesting man, not simply because of his brilliance as a physicist, but because he had an intuition of the nature of the cosmos that can only be regarded as religious. It was unformed religiously. I mean, he had grown up in a Jewish family, but I don't think there was much practice. But Einstein saw the order in the universe, mm-hmm. the mathematical order of it, and came to what seems to me the obvious conclusion, namely, this didn't just happen.
Yeah.
But that seems to escape a lot of people today, so I thought it was good to bring that up again.
Yeah, I remember Stephen Hawking, shortly before his death, an interview somewhere, and him talking about, just a confirmed atheist. And I thought of all the brilliance that he's shown. How can you miss the obvious?
I wrote a piece, and I think it was National Review Online, mm-hmm. Right after he died. I think it was called Stephen Hawking's Surprise. And I said he now, I think, understands that the universe is even more remarkable than he thought.
Right.
I hope the purification of that knowledge will lead him to a happy eternity. Well, I got all these absurd emails from people saying, he's in hell, he's in hell, you can't win for losing sometimes. But no, there was a kind of wooden-headedness about these matters. There has been for a long time. And it's a shame, because some of the most interesting conversations in the world going on right now are between religion and science.
Mm-hmm.
And the new atheists are really the outliers in all of this. And Einstein's a reminder of that, so that's why he's in the book.
Yeah, the several others that strike me. I think one that that I actually managed to interview that you've, I'm sure, interviewed many times was Cardinal Avery Dulles. I think one of the few cardinals that was never a bishop, if I'm correct. And I was fascinated by in my interview with him years ago, by his conversion story. And I knew of John Foster Dulles. I didn't know of Avery Dulles. And it wasn't a bolt of lightning. He wasn't riding a donkey. He wasn't nothing, you know. I just started reading, and it finally came over me that this was the church I belonged in, the Catholic Church.
Avery and I were very good friends for mm-hmm. 25 years. He and I were Richard Newhouse's confirmation sponsors when he came into the church. And we worked together closely on many projects. He was a remarkable figure, the plumb line of sanity in American theology for many, many years. And it was a real tribute to the vitality of serious Catholic thought in the United States when John Paul II made him a cardinal, I think with the enthusiastic endorsement of then Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger. And Avery is, like many of these giant figures, much missed today. There's really nobody that's taken his place, I'm afraid.
Yeah. And then another name that people from the 60s and 70s will remember, or remember from Watergate, Charles Colson, a real interesting person.
Chuck Colson, whom I knew for, I suppose, 15 or 20 years, was one of the most remarkable Christian witnesses of our time, a genuine conversion experience while he was in prison for his Watergate shenanigans. He then went on to study theology seriously. He founded one of the great ministries of our time, Prison Fellowship, which is, I think, the best thing that's happened in the American prison system in the last 50 years. And it was a privilege to get to know him and to work with him on several projects over a period of about two decades, I think.
You know, it's always interesting to me, you know, you talk about a sincere conversion, and a lot of people nowadays poo-poo that, not necessarily with Colson, but with that sort of thing, and say, "Oh, it's just a convenient way to escape accountability, escape embarrassment, and all that." And yet, I was very struck by his conversion. Just as I remain struck even today, and I argue with people about it, I think George Wallace had a sincere conversion, not necessarily to Christianity, but from his racist past. A lot of people disagree with me.
No, I think that was absolutely the case with Governor Wallace, and I think it was there was a profound Christian dimension to that. Mm-hmm. So we may even hope for President Biden here that he will discover the full meaning of his Catholicism, or perhaps a bit closer to home where you are, Governor Newsom.
So the another person that just very, very interesting to me throughout his life was Andrew Greeley.
Andy was, as I say, the last boisterous moment in ethno-Catholicism in the United States. He once described himself as a loudmouthed Irish priest, and while there was a bit of self-creation, if you will, in that description, it was largely true. He was a very gifted writer. Our columns appeared cheek by jowl in Catholic papers for years. He never understood John Paul II, which was a tragedy. And he never quite got over his rejection, frankly, of Humanae Vitae, which I think warped his view of the church for the last 30-some years of his life. But he was a very talented guy, and he made things interesting, and therefore I wanted to include him in this collection.
Yeah, a very interesting person indeed. And, of course, William Buckley Jr., I miss that voice, that gravelly voice.
Bill was another remarkable personality, perhaps one of the five most influential Catholics in the United States in the 20th century. Very serious in his Catholicism. Great fun to be with. I hope his shade will pardon me if I say he was a man of deeply democratic instincts, small d, Democrat. There was nothing snobbish or haughty about him. He was terrific with young people. He helped an enormous number of people in their professions and careers. He was a good man, a good, good man.
Another person that I was really struck with your descriptions of a man of great courage, I think, Cardinal George.
Yeah, he was a good friend for 25 years, and I have to say I still have his last voicemail message to me on my cell phone. I can't bring myself to erase it yet, even though it's been a long time since he died. He's an exemplar of courage in the book. He was a polio victim as a young man. He was in constant pain, lived with 40 pounds of steel wrapped around his legs so he could walk. But you would never know that from, you know, his demeanor. And he said to me once, I think when this is when the euthanasia issue was first emerging, he said, you know, we're going to have to spend the rest of our lives explaining to people that suffering and death are good for you. And he could say that because he'd internalized that himself. I had hoped to see him in the last days of his life. I missed by a day. But now Bishop Bob Barron, then Father Barron, mm-hmm. went to see him the day before he died. And he was reading St. Thomas Aquinas on the angelic vision of God.
Oh, wow.
And Bob just looked at him, and the Cardinal said, well, I'm going to meet God soon. I thought I'd better get prepared. just remarkable.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. I did not have the pleasure of ever having met him, but I certainly followed him. And finally, of course, and someone that you're famous for with him, Pope St. John Paul II.
I included in this collection two reminiscences of John Paul II. One was first published in the Wall Street Journal right after he died. The other was in Newsweek. They're an attempt to get to the man, the human personality, as well as to assess the public impact in a way that I couldn't do in Witness to Hope and the End and the Beginning. But you know, it'll be 16 years next month after his death, and I think he looms larger and larger in the Catholic imagination, at least in the living parts of the Church, year by year. So it's good to remember him.
Absolutely. The book we're talking about, Not Forgotten, by George Weigel, comes to you from Ignatius Press. You can get it at your favorite Catholic bookstore or go to Ignatius.com to order it online. What are you working on now?
I'm working on a book in defense of the Second Vatican Council, which I hope will be published for its 60th anniversary in the mm-hmm. fall of 2022.
Very good. We will look forward to that. And if we're lucky, you will grace us again when that book comes out.
I'll look forward to it, Bob. Thank you very much.
Thank you. God bless, George.
Greatly, thank you. Bye-bye.
Greatly appreciate it. George Weigel, papal biographer, spent, you can't imagine how much time he spent with Pope John Paul II, now Saint Pope John Paul II.
It's funny how some things stick with you when someone says them. I'm going to start using the phrase wood-headed much more.
Woodheaded.
Yeah, he said that.
Yeah.
That's a very.
I think it's hyphenated.
It's a very diplomatic way of saying a very obvious thing about somebody that you know may not be very nice, but it's a nice way to put it. So woodheaded.
Well, you know the thing that I'm fascinated with this book, and George Weigel is one of the great Catholic authors.
Yeah,
I won't say of all time because we had some pretty good ones. Although he'd be up there with all time as well, but certainly of our modern day Catholic writers, John Paul, it didn't allow him to be his biographer just by chance.
Yeah,
And I notice when the TV networks, when there's a Catholic issue or even a religious issue of some kind or a moral issue of some kind, who's front and center there? It's George Weigel.
Yep.
And he loves the Church. He loves God. He loves Christ. And he's brought together being a sports guy, I like Gino Marchetti, played for the Colts, the Baltimore Colts, Frank Robinson, Jackie Robinson, Earl Weaver. Weaver was the Baltimore Colts manager. Jackie Robinson, of course, the
Orioles.
First black player in the major leagues, and Frank Robinson, one of the greatest Baltimore Orioles, one of the greatest Major League Baseball players ever.
You don't get too many Catholic books with Cass Elliot in them either.
No.
Right?
No.
So the different perspectives are interesting.
But like all other books, it's got to be readable, and it's right. so readable. And it's, you know, these each chapter is devoted to one person, and it's 2, 3, 4 pages, and some really touching things. He includes his mom and dad in this,
mm-hmm.
and some of these people will be people maybe you haven't heard of. I'm included in that. There were names in here that I'm going, who's that? But and then I would read about them, and I would go, how come I didn't know about this person?
It's amazing how much human history there is, because I hear about things like that with people all the time, and I'm like, wait a minute, this is a really big deal, and I don't even, and I've fancied myself a student of history, and it's interesting how that works. You know, I was going to bring up a name that's not in the book, obviously, but he kept talking about the old Baltimore Colts, and this is probably a name it was a guy that I used to love watching as a kid. Remember Art Donovan?
Oh yeah,
yeah. He was always on Carson and a lot. He was entertaining. The football players back then, like you were talking about that story about how it's sort of a little less sportsmanship nowadays as there used to be. There was a lot of guys back then that were that sort of personalities that were people that you actually could watch on TV and listen to and not be worried they're going to say or do something that's going to be offensive or bother you.
You know, hit a home run and run around the bases and gesture to the pitcher and shake your finger, or win 100-meter dash and turn around and point at everybody that you just beat. You know, and it's just like we've always understood sore losers.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that just happens. Although I remember my dad, when I was playing sports, he said, you be the best loser in the world.
Absolutely.
He knew I was a loser. So
might as well be good at it, right?
Best loser in the world, because you're gonna lose sometimes out there. In fact, you're going to lose a lot.
It's a good thing as a kid you don't get the subtext as much.
Yeah. You congratulate your opponent on a job well done. You don't make an excuse like, my ankle hurts, or gee, I had the flu yesterday. If you're not well enough to play, you don't play.
Right.
But once you get out there, you demean your opponent. If you say, well, yeah, but he got to practice and I was sick and blah, blah, blah. You know, because you take away from their.
Right.
And the true sportsman revels in the other guy's glory.
I remember when I was playing football back when I was playing semi-pro football for years, a team, and it was kind of a ragtaggy kind of thing every so often. A team showed up with, I believe it was 13 players. They needed 11 to field the team. And, you know, we're all adults then. And we were like the defending league champions. So, I mean, we were no joke. And these guys showed up. And I remember my teammates were sitting there and they were like, I don't know, these guys, you know, we should make them call it and this and that. And I go, hey, they showed up.
They
put their helmets on. They deserve what's coming just like everybody else does. Right. And if we lose, it's because of this attitude right here. So
right.
It's like you got to go out there and just do it. They're showing up. Don't apologize for beating somebody. If they show up, they deserve it. And they deserve to win. They win.
A reasonable final score to that game would be 13-11.
Exactly. It's an interesting book. I think it'll be an interesting read for anybody who gets it.
And obviously, it's George Weigel. It's very well written.
Yeah.
And it's fun and it's entertaining. And I don't know how many people know the story of the 1951 University of San Francisco Dons, the city on the hill in San Francisco, Catholic, where Ignatius Press started. And it used to be called, St. Ignatius.
Mm-hmm.
It became USF. And my goodness, this team could have played for the national championship in college football. Undefeated, 10 guys go to the pros, people like Ollie Mattson, these are old names to people my generation know them, and undefeated, and got invited to a bowl game where if they won that bowl game, back then the national champion was declared by the media, you know, by vote, you know, and they called it the mythical national champion. They didn't have a championship, but they tried to match the two best teams in the country usually in some of the bowl games. And they said, your black players can't come. And it wasn't even a discussion. The coach just said, what are we going to do? And Marchetti stood up, who's in the book, and said, you know, the heck with them.
Yeah.
A little more colorfully than that.
I'm sure he did.
And that was that.
Yeah.
You know? And nobody was like, man, we could play for the national championship. I'm sorry. They're not going to get to play with us. But, hey, we're no.
Hey, team's your team.
No way. And this is 19... 19- 51. This is before Rosa Parks.
Mm-hmm.
This is, you know, this is like, these guys are our brothers. These guys are, and it is a Catholic school. And that is, I knew that story for a long time. And but George Weigel tells it very, very well.
Yeah.
And it's inspiring.
He also has one of those great author voices.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like how you, like, you expect, you know, all authors to sound like Orson Welles when they talk, you know, that sort of, that voice, when you listen to him talk, you assume that there's this sort of large office with a bunch of, you know, wooden, you know, bookshelves with giant tomes all over them. And he's just, you know, they're reading from there, because he's got that sort of, you know, that authoritative yet sort of smooth author voice.
I love to, when I said Charles Colson, he said, oh yeah, Chuck. And then, yeah. And then when I said William Buckley, he says, Bill.
Yeah,
I know. They were his buddies.
Yeah, it's such a great thing, because you rarely get history from the first person perspective, so it's nice.
And sometimes people with giant intellects like George Weigel, lacking in wit. This was full of wit. This book, mm-hmm. it's fun to read.
Yeah.
It's fun to read. And the mixture between Charles Colson and Gino Marchetti, the Pope John Paul II, St. John Paul II, Andrew Greeley, and Einstein. You know, there's a appetizer, there's the salad, there's the main course, and there's dessert.
And it's just enough of, controversy is the wrong word, but putting Einstein and different people in the book is just enough of a huh factor for people to go, wait, okay, so why is he in this book? And then you read it and you understand it. I find it interesting. I've had a few of those conversations with people before about people that you wouldn't expect would be in a place that they are, and then you hear the explanation, and you get history, you get all of these different things you didn't know. And it's great. And the great thing is, too, is nowadays there's so many people afraid to ask or say that they don't know something. So reading books is always a good way to pretend like you're smart, because you can do it in the secret. No one knows you're doing it. And then you learn all kinds of new stuff.
You know, he's also a very nice guy. The first thing he said was, it's good to be with you again.
Yes.
He remembered.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean, he remembered.
And when I answered the phone, I think a lot of people forget that the producer answers the phone first. And he's like, hey, Bob, how are you? And I was like, oh, hey, it's Gabe. He goes, oh, hey, Gabe, how are you? Like, he was like, he knew me too. But he fully expected just to have a nice conversation with you. You know, it's nice.
Yeah, it is. It's nice when people do that. And again, Not Forgotten by George Weigel, Ignatius Press. Just as he says, Elegies for and Reminiscences of the Diverse Cast of Characters, most of them admirable. And some of the reviews of the book are just really, really good. Andrew Ferguson from the Atlantic, and also the author of Land of Lincoln. These sketches, most of them brief and by turns, celebratory or bemused, serve as a kind of catalog of recent intellectual history, Catholic and otherwise, in America and elsewhere. It's a book for dipping into, assuming you can put it down. That's, you know, that's what I was doing. I was reading a short one on Frank Robinson, and another one on Gino Marchetti, another one on Cardinal George, who's a real inspiration, Andrew Greeley. And then I couldn't put it down. I wanted to read about all of them. I wanted to read about Mama Cass, you know, just great. Great stuff. Lance Morrow, author of God and Mammon, Chronicles of American Money. What a cast of characters, and what a feast presided over by George Weigel's wide-ranging civilized intelligence and his astonishing talent for friendship. The book is a pure delight. George Will, a very well-known author and columnist, The Conservative Sensibility, one of his books. In these deft summations of lives to remember, George Weigel displays his distinctive blend of philosophic sophistication and humane sympathy. His farewells, mostly fond, a few bracingly acerbic, are an intellectual feast to be nibbled now and then or consumed in one sitting. Either way, readers will be nourished. We'll take a quick break. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
This is Lincoln Snyder, Superintendent of Catholic Schools, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thanks, Lincoln. Appreciate that. Appreciate all you do for our great Catholic schools here in the Diocese of Sacramento. And so many of them have been open really since last August. Not all of them, but a great many of them, and have really been an example to the rest of the schools, the public schools and others, other private schools, as to how to get back open, as we see many, many schools hatching plans to get back open. Some of them back open already, some of them before the end of the year, some of them in the fall. But our great Catholic schools are just doing such a great job. And went to virtual learning last spring quickly, over the weekend. No, he didn't wait at all. Well, you know, despite the pandemic, so much going on here in the Diocese of Sacramento, a lot of workshops, a lot of just great things going on, even though they may all have to be virtual. An event coming up. It's more than an event. It's a mass. It's the Chrism Mass. Unfortunately, will be live streamed. Bishop Soto will preside at the annual Chrism Mass on March the 23rd, which is the Thursday before Holy Week. Some dioceses do it Thursday. They do it on Holy Thursday, usually in the morning, and then the priests can get back to their home parishes for the Last Supper for Thursday night. And but in the Diocese of Sacramento, which is so vast, they do it on the Thursday before. And this is where all the holy oils that will be used, the three holy oils that are used throughout the diocese, are blessed at the Chrism Mass. And Bishop Soto and the priests of the diocese will pray for God's continued blessings on the local church of Sacramento. The priests also renew their priestly promises at this Mass. And at this Eucharist, the bishop will bless the three holy oils, which are used in sacramental celebrations in all parishes of the diocese throughout the coming year. And it's just wonderful, wonderful Mass. And it will be live streamed from the cathedral, 6 p.m. Tuesday. It's going to be Tuesday this year. I think I said Thursday. It will be Tuesday, March the 23rd at 6 p.m. We'll remind you again, Tuesday, March 23, 6 p.m. from the Cathedral of the Blessed Sacrament. And there is a link there. Go to scd.org/chrism, C-H-R-I-S-M. ISM. It's such a great mass in terms of showing the unity. These oils, which are the olive oil, is raised in Yolo County and donated by a family there, and then these oils are blessed and they go out to each parish throughout this vast 20-county diocese of Sacramento. Some of these oils travel almost 300 miles to a home parish, say like in Yreka or Alturas, and it's just a wonderful wonderful mass. So be sure and watch it Tuesday, March 23rd, 6 o'clock, live streamed scd.org/chrism. Well, we are just pleased and honored to be joined by Nicole Zamora from our great Catholic cemeteries. Nicole, good day to you.
Good day to you, Bob. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Surviving the COVID with four teenagers in tow. When you shelter in place in a 1951 small tract home with four teenagers, you learn a lot of things. And you have a lot of family moments. Most of them good.
That is a good way to describe COVID 2020 and now part of 21, right? Yes. Family moments.
When yes. I told Bishop Soto about that, he said, "Have you heard of St. Jude?"
Oh, Bishop, so wise. Yes.
Yes. Anyway, we're doing fine. Hope you're doing fine as well.
We are. We are doing good. Hunkering down, but enjoying the fact that right now things are opening up. More people are vaccinated, right? Those numbers are where we need it to be. Sacramento's in that red tier. So things are looking up.
It sure seems like they're getting better, and not to diminish those people who are still sick, those people who are struggling with it, and those people who lost a loved one, and of course you have seen that firsthand.
Yeah, right. So we definitely have, and you know, I think the last year has one tested all of our employees, right? All of us as managers, and really just moving forward with compassion. So thank goodness, right? We're a Catholic funeral home, we're Catholic cemeteries, and we get to fall back on those rights. And even though maybe, right, you were only allowed 8 people, maybe it was smaller than you wanted it to be, at least we were still able, you know, once we were able to at different parts throughout this whole COVID experience, to be able to celebrate the life of that loved one, and then really their journey home, right? Mm-hmm. Then you get laid to rest, and, you know, our cemeteries were open this whole entire time, with the exception of the mausoleum building. And we did have a lot of visitors. So when there was not much else to do, people did come out and visit their loved one, which was good. And we're hoping that that, you know, sticks, that people still do that, right? It's a beautiful, serene place to come and pray and, you know, spend some time with, you know, in prayer and spend some time with your loved one.
And I know Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services, you've been very COVID conscious. You've been and yet not doing everything you can to not let it interfere with the sacredness and the solemnness of the what's going on.
Yes, right. So again, following all those guidelines from the CDC, from the governor, from bishops, from, you know, our funeral association, but along the line is when all of that, we understand that people, you know, we're still receiving people at the worst day, right? So maybe they weren't able to even be with their loved one in the hospital, and now we're telling them all these different stuff, you know, as they're preparing their funeral in their cemetery. But it's getting better now, right? Again, as things are opening, still keeping all those, you know, COVID protocols in place. So mask, you know, washing of your hands, the hand sanitizers, but only using a pen once. I think that was the number one order we had to order, right, is pens mm-hmm. and more pens. So, yes, as people were signing in. But, you know, Bob, as stuff is opening, we have a wonderful experience for your listeners coming up, and it's a volunteer opportunity this upcoming Saturday.
March the 20th.
March the 20th. And so we have two locations. We are right there at St. Joseph Cemetery on 21st Street.
Right.
And then out in Colusa at our Holy Cross location, which is on Westcott Road. And so, right, what we're looking to do is from 10 to noon, come on out and help us with the light restoration and cleaning. So what does that mean? That means everything from picking up trash, you know, kind of cleaning some of those older memorial markers, which most of us know as headstones. Just being together, gathering outside safely, right? We know we're not going to have hundreds of people come, but we can accommodate quite a few. And then we'd love to break bread with everyone that comes to help us, but in order to be COVID friendly, we're going to send you home with a free bag lunch.
Very good.
You get to come out in Holy Cross and Colusa. Father Matt Blank will actually be blessing all those that are there.
Very good.
Just a little prayer and blessing as we get that volunteer opportunity going. And then hopefully we can do that as well at St. Joseph. So for sure we will begin with a prayer, as every good Catholic does as we embark upon a new experience. But hoping that we can confirm with a priest here pretty soon.
You know, I've always thought if I were a Catholic priest, I would definitely want to be a parish priest, and I would want a parish like Our Lady of Lourdes in Colusa. Such a beautiful little town, such a faith-filled parish, and you know, I love that part of the Sacramento Valley.
I do too. I have so much fun I guess pre-COVID, right? That's how we experience our lives now. Pre-COVID, during COVID, and then whatever we're on right now.
I don't know what. I want to say post-COVID, but I don't think we're quite there.
No, we're not quite there yet, but definitely right on the right path, right direction. So, pre-COVID, I used to have the pleasure of going out and visiting, you know, all 68. We have more than 68 parishes within our diocese, but 68 parishes kind of fall within the footprint of our funeral homes and cemeteries. And going out to Our Lady of Lourdes there in Colusa and meeting Father Matt. And, right, I get to be part of their community for that whole weekend because I went to all the masses, right? And so that part I used to love, and slowly and surely getting back into doing that now. So that is a pretty exciting time that we're having here.
Yeah, and so people, you just want to bring some work gloves and some elbow grease?
Work gloves and elbow grease. We are asking for advance reservation, and again, a lot of that has to do with our COVID protocols. So just ensuring we know how many people are there, we have enough jobs for all the folks that are coming, and that we can have that lunch to go. I've had wonderful questions of, is there an age limit? So we are asking if anyone does come who is under 18, that they definitely come with an adult and a parent. But we welcome Boy Scout troops, Girl Scout troops, you name it, any sort of, group or organization that you belong to. We just ask you to go to our website, which is cfcfsacramento.org. And you will see an event tab right there. It will show the two different locations, and just RSVP to let us know. A quick little plug for myself. Our website's brand new, so if you haven't visited our website in this past week, I encourage you to go visit it. We've done a full makeover on the website itself, and starts with a fun little video message from Bishop in both English and Spanish, and then shares with you a lot about what we do. Funeral, mortuary, cremation, and, of course, those burial services.
How have things changed for you, not during the pandemic, but since the bit of lessening of the pandemic, we hope? Have you been able to loosen some of the restrictions or not?
Some, yes, right? So now we are doing those funeral masses in our chapels. During the time that the restrictions were a little tighter, we had the ability to do some of the funeral masses outside. So that was a talk about a disruptor, right? Talk about something that everyone would have probably said, well, that'll never happen. You only do graveside outside, mm-hmm. right? During the pandemic, we were able, again, consecrated grounds, right, at your local Catholic cemetery, so St. Mary Cemetery and Funeral Center, Calvary Cemetery and Funeral Center. For those of your listeners in Vallejo, we have All Souls Cemetery and Funeral Center. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we have, altogether, we have 11 cemeteries. So, right, we were able to do a full mass outside. We were smart. We brought in heaters so that the priest and the immediate family could be a little warm. Some of those days were a little chilly. But the family then was able to get, you know, all those Catholic rites. And so something that is, of course, very important, the vigil, the funeral mass, and then that committal. Now that we're in the red tier, but really since the Supreme Court's ruling, we've been able to open up a little bit more, mm-hmm. Have our services, have those funeral masses inside. We work with parishes, right? So if the parish is open and they're able to do funeral masses at the parish, we work with the parish and the families, as your funeral home, you know, mortuary, to be able to kind of logistically get all those moving parts to happen.
That's great. You say you have 68 different parishes that you work with through cemeteries. And I remember as a kid in a lot of little towns, not necessarily Northern California, you would see a cemetery like right behind a church.
Mm-hmm.
Do we still have any of that?
We do, right? Some we help, some we help with where we, you know, they're under our umbrella. Some we just advise on, but a fun little one is out in Rio Vista, right?
Right.
There is, yep, St. Joseph out in Rio Vista. And, you know, right there, really close by that parish there in Rio Vista. You know, there's a couple others that are probably going to escape me right at this moment, but I know that one is one that mm-hmm. we, you know, kind of falls under our umbrella there.
Right, right. And again, for those that wish to participate in it, you'd be more than welcome, and you'll get a great lunch to go home with.
Exactly.
And if you need some map questing, the Holy Cross Cemetery in Colusa is at 1741 Westcott Road. That's Wescott, 1741 Westcott Road in Colusa, and St. Joseph's here in Sacramento. You just come down 21st Street, heading south, and as soon as you cross Broadway, on your left is going to be St. Joseph's Cemetery on 21st Street.
Yes. And I would like to, one more plug for myself here, Bob. We are hiring an outreach coordinator. So if you, any of your listeners out there, would think it would be fun to work for cemeteries and funerals and host these types of events and work with me, we are.
That would definitely be fun.
Yes, we are accepting applications for that position, and that you can find on the SCD website, so of course the diocese website at scd.org, or you can find that on my website as well too, cfcfsacramento.org.
Very good. Nicole, I know you're going to get a good group out there on Saturday at both cemeteries. Thanks for all you do, and you're out there in the Lord's vineyard working hard.
Ah, thank you so much, and thank you for all that you do, helping us to share the good work that we're all trying to do in each of our ministries.
Amen. Amen. God bless, Nicole. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's Nicole Zamora from Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services, in charge of the public outreach, and they certainly have the right person for that job, and it just does wonderful work there. That's going to do it for us for the day. Thanks for listening. God bless. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2000. 2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. So the easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
Hi, this is Laura Lynn, Assistant Director for Lay Formation, and you are listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Bow down and worship him now. How great!